Talk about the Greens, that bunch of idiots.
Hey there, Climactic Collective listeners.
I'm Emerald Moon.
And I'm Tom Bella.
And together we host Serious Danger,
a podcast about Australia's broken political system and its greatest threat,
the Australian Greens.
It's a show about green politics in Australia.
The kind of politics that puts people and the planet before profit.
We talk to cool and interesting people about fighting for good shit, like taxing billionaires,
housing for all,
workers' rights,
First Nations justice,
and drugs. Sweet, sweet, sweet drugs.
Join us on Serious Danger every Sunday. You can subscribe to us anywhere you get podcasts.
You can find us on Patreon. We're at Serious Danger AU on the socials, or just head to seriousdangerpod.com.
That's Serious Danger with me, Emerald Moon.
And me, Tom Ballard. Do you think we need something at the end there? Go Greens.
Welcome to the Sustainable You podcast with your hosts, Jackie Kidman and Lisa Wisdom, self-proclaimed urban hippies, waste warriors, and passionate women. Tune in for practical information and inspiration on how to reduce your impact on the environment and become a more sustainable you.
Before we begin, Lisa and Jackie would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and the places on which we record our podcast. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
So, welcome to this week's episode of Sustainable You Podcast. This week I have a guest that I met through the Climate Reality Leadership course a little, I don't know how long ago that was, maybe it was 2 months ago. Mandy and I participated in the Climate Reality Leadership training with Al Gore, and I met some amazing, very talented people. Hang on, I've just got a rubbish truck coming past my house. Just hang on a sec. Sorry. It's bin day. There we go. I think that's it. Okay. So in the group that I was in, it was pretty amazing. We had some amazing people doing some phenomenal things in the sustainability sort of area. I felt very overwhelmed and also very, very grateful to be as part of that group and help me to continue to learn. So I thought one way to be able to pay it forward in that group is to share some of the stories and of some of these leaders. And the first one is Mandy. She sent me through an email yesterday and I was like, oh my God, we need to talk about this. I never really read long emails, to be honest with you, but I was just thrilled. So welcome, Mandy. Thank you for your time. I really do appreciate you coming onto our podcast. Normally I have my co-host Lisa with me, but she couldn't make this one. So I thought, well, it'll just be the two of us. So welcome to the Sustainable You podcast.
Thanks, Jackie. I'm really privileged to be here, actually. It's pretty cool.
So we're going to talk about spider crabs.
Correct.
So normally our podcast is about what things people can do, changes they can make, and this one in terms of some of the steps that they can do to support this and the importance of it. I think it's really simple and it's also really powerful. So I'm going to hand it over to you and I'd love for you to talk and share about the Spider Crab Alliance.
And thanks for the opportunity. Look, I just watched David Attenborough's A Life on Our Planet last weekend, which is an awesome film, and it really just brought home to me what we're trying to do here. You know, we're losing so much of our biodiversity and our natural wonders. So it reinforced that, you know, we're on the right track. So we're very lucky here. I live down on the Mornington Peninsula, and every year around the first full moon in winter, which is, you know, late May, early June, depending, the spider crabs start to aggregate. Now, the generally in the bay somewhere, but really scattered wide. But they come into these huge aggregations in quite a few different locations to give them protection, to give them safety in numbers, because they're about to undergo something that's pretty important in their life cycle and makes them incredibly vulnerable, and that's molting. So shedding their old shell and then coming out with a brand new soft formed shell that increases their size, sometimes 30%, and then harden, and then they can go back to whatever they're doing the rest of the time. And this has been going on and has been really celebrated by lots of enthusiasts, people in the water and on the piers for many years. But a couple of years ago, it caught the attention of a group of people who like to harvest the crabs. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But it turned into a bit of a just a crazy, chaotic time. So 2019, the crabs actually came to Blairgowrie Pier. And I went in the water at the beginning of the aggregation. And it's just a carpet of crabs. It's pretty amazing. They're all clambering over each other and they're trying to get away from the stingrays that come to feed on them, and they're climbing up the pylons of the pier, and it's just a really amazing thing to see. And then I went back a week later with a friend and they're pretty much all gone. There was a few up the side, but the floor was empty. And you'd know if that was because they'd left or after a successful molt, because there'd just be thousands of shells everywhere. But that wasn't the case. There were not many shells and the crabs had gone. So, and we had seen people coming down the pier with nets. And so we sort of put two and two together and said, oh, this is not right. So Spider Crab Alliance was formed, and I joined probably about a month or so afterwards, and a petition was set up on change.org to get all of those people that know about this phenomenon, have come and witnessed it, and often come from both interstate and international. And of course, it was featured on David Attenborough's Blue Planet 2 series, sort of that following year. It was filmed during the Blairgowrie aggregation a couple of years ago. And we actually saw the guys filming one day. And it just, we needed to make a difference. So we set up this petition, please let's have a no take, particularly around this time. We got, at the time, we got nearly 20,000 signatures that year. So, you know, a really big groundswell of opinion. And we started to meet with VFA, the Victorian Fisheries Authority, to try and get a solution, because we really knew and feared that 2020 would be not only a repeat, but an increase. As more word gets out, particularly on social media, it's one of those double-edged swords, social media. It can do really good things, but it can really draw attention to things that you don't want on the radar. And we just knew if nothing changed, we knew that 2020 wasn't going to be the best year. And then coming into 2020, of course, COVID hit. So that kind of put a lot of the brakes on negotiations, but also kept people away. So we were sort of hopeful that we might just squeeze through the season. Unfortunately, the season, the really key bit of the season, coincided just too perfectly with the long weekend of the Queen's birthday. COVID restrictions eased. They moved this year to Rye Pier, the sort of ones that you can access. And everyone was allowed out and everyone was just desperate to be out. And it was a beautiful weekend and the word had really got out and lots more people. We had a much bigger increase in the number of people harvesting the crabs. And it was a disaster, to be honest. And there was a lot of damage done through this practice because a lot of the nets are dragged up the pier pylons, which rips off a lot of the habitat, the sponges. We've even got pictures of seahorses in, you know, these nets, and sort of people who are underwater who were taking these pictures sort of managed to get them out. So you're talking about habitat for lots of different, you know, invertebrates that live under there. Nets were landing on divers because it was a pretty busy year for people snorkeling and diving in the water. Rye Pier is a lot more accessible than Blair Gowrie Pier, and there's a lot more space, so it just lends itself better. The bait that's used in the nets are generally chicken carcasses, which are attached with cable ties, and we found lots of those discarded. So discarded nets, discarded cable ties, and at one point up to 80 chicken carcasses were cleaned up by some of the divers. Add to that the litter on the pier, around the car park. I mean, I've got pictures of overflowing bins one night in the middle of the weekend. And they also got word of other sort of aggregation locations that we kept quite secret, and they were coming and finding those and, you know, telling their friends to come. And some of them were not doing the right thing. Most were. We have to be really clear about this, that the rules do allow spider crab harvesting. And most people were doing the right thing in terms of numbers and compliance, but some were collecting in the shallows, so we reported that. And like you say, they're not deliberately trying to destroy the pylon environments, but it's just a sort of, it's the way it works, really, as they're trying to pull up their nets. So it really wasn't a good result at all. And so we sort of joined forces then, because a Spider Crab Alliance were a pretty small group. So we joined forces with another couple of organisations. So Spider Crabs Melbourne is a fan page on Facebook. It's been going since 2015, and that's just for anyone that loves the spider crabs and is in the water, regardless of your background and regardless of whether you're a fisher or not, because there's plenty of people who fish who also love to dive and snorkel and don't agree with this either at this particular time. And also the Victorian National Parks Association, which do take on quite a lot of sort of environmental campaigns. So they agreed to be sort of the more formal side of it and put it through their website. So we're fortunate that to save our spider crabs campaign. So we've been working flat out basically since June, having meetings with as many people as we think need to be involved in this: community groups, stakeholders, local council, MPs, the fisheries authority. We want everyone to just see how important this event is. One of the arguments that's put forward by fisheries and also some other people in the community is that there are hundreds and thousands of the spider crabs. First of all, we don't have any actual scientific evidence about that, but there's plenty of anecdotal evidence. And it's something that we've always acknowledged, that yes, there are plenty of them, but most of them are inaccessible for people, and hence why they're accessible for harvesters. It's the only way that the whole community can enjoy this event. And for me, losing that aggregation during the season is enough of a reason to want to stop it. Even if you take out the environmental damage, the litter that's created and all the other impacts, to be able to come down on day one and experience the aggregation and come down on day 12, you know, because they're pretty much after a couple of weeks, they're usually done and dusted, and still be able to see these piles, these mounds, as they call them, of crabs all careering over each other is really special. And not everyone can come on day one. You know, it's not like we can say, right, everyone who wants to look at them, come down day one to day four, and you get to go snorkeling and diving and watching from the pier, and then we'll let the crab harvesters come, because it doesn't matter, everyone's seen them. It doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. And what we've found is that it's a very small number of people, even though it feels like a lot. It's only about a couple of hundred people that harvested the crabs this year. Most of them are one-time fishers. They're not actually regular fishers. They don't have regular fishing licenses. They buy just a 2 or 3 day license. Sometimes it's just an opportunistic, oh, bit of something different, day out with the family. Yeah, we might eat them, but we might make them into soup. Or a lot of them said, oh, we tried them, we weren't that really into them, but it was fun. We might do it again. And it seems to be just, why are we giving a very small group of people who are not really that bothered one way or the other, to be honest, a free rein when there's thousands of people that support the other side of it, the event, the long-standing event, and the cultural practice of observing nature and enjoying it. Mm. So that's what we're sort of fighting for, and we're asking for a no-take season that covers that critical time. We have put it down as April to July because that allows for seasonal variations, and if they come in a little bit earlier than normal or if they come in a bit later than normal, we're sort of covered, because we can't, you know, it's generally around the same time, but you can't ever predict that. So we've sort of said April to July, and that will pretty much cover us. We might even be happy to say, okay, if could you just have June and July, or May and June, and we'd consider that as a fair compromise. What's happened in the interim is that the idea of reducing the bag limit was brought up. And to be fair, the bag limit was always just a default setting because nobody had ever caught spider crabs before. It's not a commercial fishery, sort of new on the horizon, and it fell into just other crab species, which are a lot smaller, and sometimes an invasive non-native species, so they don't mind them being taken. So 30 was set, and they talked about reducing the bag limit, and at first we sort of thought, yeah, okay, that it's not what we want, but we're prepared to accept that as a stepping stone. We still want the no take, but it's not a bad win to have a reduced bag limit for the rest of the year anyway, particularly as some of these crabs can get quite big. So, you know, nobody needs 30. I mean, I don't know what you do with them. You'd need a pretty big freezer. Then some research, a survey was done by fisheries asking people who do like to collect the crabs, how many did you catch? And the vast majority of them caught 15 or less. So they decided to reduce the bag limit to 15. And a few people have said, well, why haven't you supported that? Because we're actually opposing that. Because from where we're sitting, that makes no difference. Mm. It doesn't change the number of crabs that will be taken, because that's pretty much what everyone was taking anyway. And it doesn't address any of the issues of the litter and the habitat destruction. And from what we could understand, not a lot more money was being invested in really big education campaign and compliance. And if you think about it, if they're going to monitor this, it needs to be around the clock almost, because lots of people fished at night and for several days. It's a lot of fishery officer time. I just don't think it's doable. Whereas if you just say close it, it solves a lot of the problems. It gives the crabs their opportunity to molt. It gives everyone who wants to enjoy the crabs their view of them, enjoyment, protects the environment, protects the pier and all that, you know, sort of area. And we're particularly as well concerned about numbers, because if it moves back to Blairgowrie, Blairgowrie is a much smaller area, so it would be quite difficult to have hundreds of people on the pier all trying to harvest the crabs. So that's where we're at. And at the moment, the public consultation has just got just short of a week to go. So it's a legal requirement that they put it out for the public to make submissions. So anybody can make a submission. And what we're asking people is, we'd like you to say, please oppose the reduced bag limit because we want a no-take season. Now, I'm happy if people want to put their own thoughts on that and say, yes, okay, 15 is good, but we still want a no-take season because it doesn't really address any of the issues. So that closes next Tuesday, the 27th of October. If you go to the VMPA website, you'll see that on their front page, there's a box about the spider crabs, and you click on that and that will take you through the process. There's also information on Spider Crab Alliance Facebook page and Save Our Spider Crabs Instagram, and they will all have that kind of information, and share around your networks. We need as many people as possible to make a submission asking for a no-take zone, because the more people that are heard, the more hopefully that they will listen. Stop 2021 being a repeat or even worse, an escalation of what happened this year.
I'm not sure if we can get the podcast out in time for that submission, but I can definitely share it through our community on our socials and stuff like that. But I also think that regardless of whether people get a chance to listening to this after the submission is has closed anyway, I think it's about raising awareness for people that might kind of go, oh, I'm going to go down and check it out and I might go and take a few, or do you know what I mean? Like, of that, just by their actions of doing no take personally is really important for anything anyway. I mean, I think, you know, this is about the spider crabs though, but, you know, like even when you were talking about like how, you know, protecting like the seahorses and the pylons and how there's creatures and, you know, there's important ecosystems there that we don't even know if these spider crabs aren't around anymore. We don't even know what impact that then has, that ripple effect, you know, of...
So absolutely. And there isn't enough. There's so little research. I mean, one of the things that we've been trying to work out is when they come to molt, is there any mating that goes on?
That's what I was wondering.
We really can't find any research in the literature. There's information about other crab species sort of in the same bigger group, but it doesn't mean that it applies to spider crabs. We know some need to be soft-shelled, so they mate either after they've molted, or some of the crabs, the males will mate with the females, but they store the sperm on their legs, and then as soon as they've molted, the females are then able to take the sperm in and fertilize. And some, I know, how crazy is that, right? So we don't know if that applies to spider crabs. We just don't know. And also some crabs need to go through what's called a terminal molt. So the very last molt that they do, they must then reach maturity and only then can they breed. Mm. So again, we don't know if that applies to spider crabs. We don't know if they breed at a totally separate time of the year. It's just not enough research. And there's something called the precautionary principle that if you don't know, don't. If in doubt, stop. And just let's just do a bit more research and see. But also, let's not forget what's going on here. It's just an amazing thing. For me, it's a little bit akin to, you know, having on your bucket list and you want to go on safari and you want to see elephants or giraffes. And, you know, you go over to Africa and you're in this place and they go to somewhere where they know that they gather, you know, a water hole. And they say, oh, you don't mind, but there's enough elephants to share for everyone. So, you know, you guys are going to be watching them here, but on the other side, there will be some people who've paid to shoot them. I can't fathom it. I mean, I can't fathom that anyway. But no, anyone going to watch wildlife doesn't go to watch them being taken. And we're not saying that you can't harvest the spider crabs any other time of the year, because they do come into the shallows in and out throughout the year, just not in these huge numbers. And that's what's the mind-blowing bit. It's thousands of them all in one place, all over each other. Spider crabs themselves are just, they're a crab. They're not particularly mind-blowing, but it's when they're together and there's just thousands of them. And that's what you're taking away from people. You're removing that number spectacle. And yes, just because the consultation finishes next Tuesday, that's about the bag reduction. You can still write to the ministers after that and say, we want a no take. Absolutely. Yes. You know, just flub them, because then they can't ignore us.
Yes. And I've got connect, like, you know, my in-laws live down in Rosebud, and we've, you know, got quite a big connection to that, the Mornington Peninsula.
Fantastic.
And, you know, humans now have this culture of this, what's the word? I had it in my head before, of entitlement. And, you know, it's just, that's what this, again, it's just that selfish entitlement that just because you can doesn't mean you should at the same time, you know, like, and that, yeah, you're taking that away from other people to be able to, enjoy this amazing migration of nature. And, you know, we don't want in 10 years' time to say, oh, this used to happen here. And that's what this is potentially is creating as well, that they won't come into this area again, or that they'll have such small numbers that they, you know, will lose the opportunity.
Correct. And it's such a special thing for the peninsula. I mean, the fact that David Attenborough's team came just shows you how amazing it is that it's there. I mean, it happens in other parts of the world, but in quite remote places, so most people wouldn't even know it was there. This is such a special thing. And it's not divers against fishers. Way more people than divers that want to protect this. There's plenty of fishers that want to protect this, because it's not even about fishing. It's not that kind of sitting on the pier and just, you know, mindfully whiling your hours away and hoping that something will catch and taking something home. It isn't like that. And as I say, we're not adverse to people taking them at other times of the year. So we want to really make it clear that this is about a big community of all walks of life who have grown up knowing about this and now show their kids, you know, want to come and see it, and divers who are learning for the first time, or snorkelers, or just people who are coming to the peninsula in the winter and just happen to find out about it, and they come and they can't believe it when they're standing on the pier and they think we're crazy because we get in the water and it's really cold. And that's okay, but they just can't believe what they're seeing either. Yeah. So it's really special. And yeah, there aren't too many of these amazing events that are unaffected anymore. And I think it's obvious from this year that, you know, business as normal is not what we want to go back to. And that we should celebrate things like this. Yes. So anybody in the anywhere around the Melbourne area, but particularly peninsula residents, don't just write to the ministers, write to Chris Brain, who's our local MP. He's pretty supportive. So if he gets lots of letters to him as well, that gives him more of an argument to go to the ministers and say, all my residents saying they want this to continue for the foreseeable future. So
yes,
yeah.
Oh, wonderful. What great work. It's so inspiring. It's amazing. Good on you.
Thank you. Sometimes we feel very disheartened, but our supporters, we see all the comments on the socials and we go, yeah, we remember why we're doing it. And lots of people are buying. We've got merchandise on Redbubble.
Oh yes.
And lots of people. So we thought it was just going to be t-shirts, but people are getting masks and socks. And I even saw a baby grow the other day on the socials. So that's what we want. We just want people walking around with lots of signs as a walking board or something advertising.
I love it. Yeah. Such a good organisation to get behind. And that's the thing, like, where lots of people kind of feel like they can't, you know, maybe make a difference because they don't really, you know, like they might not own a house, so they can't make those, you know, like, you know, energy or power or that sort of changes. Or, but to dive into an organisation and support things that, you know, they're like, by writing a letter to your MP and using your voice, like that's huge. That's a huge step, and that's something that everybody can do. Whether you purchase green power or you use a single-use coffee cup, you can still write a letter to your MP about, you know, that sort of stuff. Like, it's not about you have to be doing all those things first before you can do this.
Yes. You can do multiple things, and we're probably one of the few campaigns that, you know, we're not fundraising, we're not campaigning for money. We get a bit of commission, I think, from the Redbubble, and that helps us to pay for stickers. And but yeah, it's not about please donate money to us. It's just take action, just do whatever you can. And so it doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. Everyone, like you say, can write a letter. Everyone can pop it on their, you know, just share our posts on their socials so that it reaches more. It doesn't cost anything, and it does make a difference. And even in terms of just looking after our natural environments, really does mitigate all of the climate change issues that we learned about in our training a couple of months ago. It's not just one action that is going to fix all of these problems. It's multiple actions, and here's one that's right on your doorstep.
I love it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Mandy, thank you so much for your time. It's so inspiring. And we certainly support the Spider Crab Alliance.
Fantastic.
And I'm sure that our community will as well. So we look forward to hearing some updates and keep emailing me and sharing that sort of stuff.
I definitely will.
Keep up the awesome work and thank you again for your time.
Thank you for giving us another platform. So it's brilliant. And we'll be back in touch.
Sustainable You can be found on Instagram at Sustainable You Pod, on Facebook at Sustainable You Podcast, or connect via email at sustainableyoupod@gmail.com. Episodes are created by Lisa and Jackie. If you appreciate the podcasting information shared, please like, subscribe, and share. If you are listening on iTunes, Jackie and Lisa would appreciate you giving them a 5-star rating and writing a review to help other people find their podcast.